You're tuned into Desperate, a podcast where two unwed women take a walk down Wisteria Lane to visit ABC's critically acclaimed show, Desperate Housewives. Retire your apron, kick off your heels, and sit back. Hit it, girls!
Welcome!
Hey, we're back!
It's Desperate, a podcast where two unwed women take a walk down Wisteria Lane to visit the Desperate Housewives. I'm Julia, and we are rolling through Fast and Furiously for the first time.
And I'm Jordan, and this is not my first time, but damn, we really are moving pretty quick. I can't believe we're already on episode 12.
Yes.
12.
Season 1, episode 12. We're out here.
Crazy.
We're over halfway through this season, and things have picked up. This is typically where a season or a series would end these days. They only make them 6 to 12 episodes.
Yeah, that's true.
In 2021. So we're in it for the long haul. We're over halfway. We hope you're watching along with us. You can do this on your DVD box set, your true fan, or you can do it on Hulu or Amazon Prime through IMDb TV. It's all up to you. You choose. One thing that is a requirement you can't choose, we can't force you though, is to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Give us a follow on Spotify.
Yes, yes.
Follow us on Instagram. Follow us on Twitter. Just stalk us everywhere that you can. Message us. Yeah, just reach out.
Reach out. We've actually gotten a couple messages now, and it seriously makes my entire day. Like, it's my favorite thing on the planet. So keep doing it. And, you know, the review, we like the ratings, of course, but reviews are also fun. So just, you know, give us a shout out anywhere, like anywhere.
Yes. Make us fan art. Do something. Please. We just like connecting with you guys over this series. It's been a blast for me to watch this for the first time. I'm obsessed with it. Mm-hmm. It makes every day that I do watch it better. I'm watching it slowly because we're going through this week by week. But yeah. Every week I'm like, I want to watch more.
But honestly, like, that's how we watched it back when it came out. We had to wait each week. So that's you're kind of getting like the full experience.
Full experience. I can't binge it. And I honestly don't watch much TV these days, you guys. Yeah. Besides this, I'm not really watching any shows. Mm-hmm. Not like I have in the past. Not like the beginning of quarantine.
Yeah.
I went through some serious shows.
Oh, man. I was watching new shit, rewatching old stuff. It was scary how many movies I watched and TV shows. It's terrifying.
Sometimes someone should be worried. Sometimes I think about how Tiger King, like, wasn't really that good, but it was just, like, everybody watched it because it was the beginning of quarantine.
Yeah, it was, like, a collective quarantine reaction. I think we were all, like we were all freaking out, and so we all just latched on to Tiger King.
Yeah. That is not the point. That's a tangent there. Either way, rate, review, follow, and most of all, requirement, enjoy the show, enjoy this show, enjoy our content, check it out, and let us know what you're thinking. So that's where we're at. That's our update there. Let me take you through what's going to happen today. The same as every other day.
Give us that structure.
If this is your first time, this is how it goes down here. Yeah. We're gonna recap what happened in episode 11 so you're not completely lost. Then we're going to tell you some desperate deeds of our own to get you warmed up for what's gonna happen with the ladies. Then we go into our recap of episode 12. We break it down beat by beat, and we give you some hot takes on what we think of everything going on. Then we wrap it all up with evaluating the episode with an Apple rating. And then we also evaluate the characters with a fuck, marry, kill.
Oh, yeah. Best part of the show, folks.
Game of fuck, marry, kill. And then we also choose a housewife of the week that just really struck a chord with us. So that's what's going to happen here. I just want to give a shout out to all of our listeners. Thank you for listening to us.
Yeah.
I see you, Dallas and Houston. I don't even know who is in Dallas and Houston and listening, but I appreciate that we have some support from Texas.
I know. We're getting support from some random places, and I'm very happy to see it. I like that we're going global.
Yeah, the support from the Lone Star State, support from India, support from UK, Ireland. What's up? really, if you are that listener there, reach out. We're just excited. We had a listener from India reach out.
Yeah.
Very cute because we have different time zones. So mm-hmm. we're like, have you listened to the episode yet? And he was like, after dinner.
Yeah. That's
because
cute.
That's when it comes out for me.
I love that.
So we are so excited to connect with you guys. But all that being said, let's talk about episode 11.
Yes. So let's do a quick recap.
Do you remember what happened?
Baby recap. Yeah. Do you want me to start?
Yeah.
I'll dive in. So the last episode was called Move On. And let me just say it was about moving on in case you yeah, didn't get that.
You guessed it.
So I'm going to jump right in with Susan and kind of overlaps with Edie's storyline. But Susan decides to host Julie's birthday party, and Carl kind of, like, guilts her into getting invited, Carl being her ex-husband.
Because Brandy broke up with him.
She cheated on him. Yes. And you could see Susan just, like, doing a little party inside, or doing a little dance inside, because she's excited that he finally got a taste of his own medicine. But basically, they all go to this birthday celebration, and Mike is there. And Susan and Edie are kind of, like, doing their thing where they're like
dueling
yeah,
over nothing,
over men that they don't even want the same men in the scene, so it's kind of like, what's the point?
Well, Susan's a little bit bitter still.
Yeah,
so Mike drops the L word before they go to this party.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Mike says I love you,
and Susan like freaks out, and she's like, he says he has tickets to a basketball game, and she's like, better fucking cancel.
Yeah,
you're coming to the party.
Yeah,
he comes, and then Carl comes, and Susan thinks it's going to be a chill night of Carl being mm-hmm. cool, but that's how Edie got there. He invited Edie.
He brings Edie.
Yeah.
And they, you know, it's a weird karaoke party, a very strange choice for Julie. And not a fun, let me rephrase that. Karaoke's fun, but this is like at a regular ass restaurant with like a piano player.
Yeah,
that just seems a little mature for like a young teen.
Yeah, you better know the song because there was not a screen with the words on it.
Yeah, it was very bizarre. But
singing requests.
As the night goes on, it is revealed that at a party in the past, Carl had felt up Edie, and they had a little dalliance, a moment
under the mistletoe.
So Susan basically has like a mental breakdown performing New York, New York. And it's very uncomfortable, and you could see Mike just, like, losing his mind. But basically, Carl announces to Susan at a later time that he wants her back.
Yeah.
And he, like, declares his love for her, which makes Susan realize that she's over him and she loves Mike, which she runs over to tell him.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the Susan-Edie storyline for the week. And then Lynette and Tom have this nanny. It's been the most boring storyline of all time, and it finally wrapped up last week with Tom. He goes downstairs and sees the nanny naked, and it gets him turned on. So
he stands on the stairs for like 5 minutes.
So long. It's very uncomfortable.
He like has a conversation with her naked.
Horrible.
It's peak creepy dude.
It's not good. And so basically, Lynette finds out that he was turned on by seeing the nanny, which is why they had sex. And Lynette is not okay with the fact that he kind of hid that whole situation. They have kind of a back and forth the whole episode. It's not the flashiest storyline, but it's a good storyline where it shows like kind of how you cope with your partner, you know,
yeah,
how they're attracted to other people and how they express that. And they basically come to the conclusion that, you know, Tom, if he can be attracted to people, but the moment he wants, you know, it could go too far, they got to take the situation away. So they basically, it gets to a point where they have to fire the nanny.
Because she is wiping down that table with her tits.
Like, yeah, and he's staring like he's drooling like a monster. It's so like, what a dog, man. He can't even like pretend. But basically, Lynette gives him a look, and he goes, all right, you're right. So they have to let the nanny go.
Yeah, I wanted them to have a threesome. I wanted it
that
to be
been
a
better ending,
more interesting.
Yeah.
But Lynette just loses her shit. We had a bit of a debate on the last episode, mm-hmm. if you do want to hear that, because I kept contradicting myself. I was like, it's not that bad. And then I would be like, wait, yeah, he's a dick. I was like, wait, no, it's not. Like, it's kind of cool, but.
No, but definitely go listen to that episode if you haven't yet, because we actually do, I feel like, have a great discussion kind of on that, and yeah. We would love to have people weigh in on it, so
yeah,
good episode.
I change my mind all the time about that. Well, with Gabby, bit of a 180. She's forced to take a job because Carlos is in jail for using slave labor. All their bank accounts are frozen, so she can't pay for her old lifestyle. She's already pawned off all her things to her neighbors and hidden them, so she has, like, nothing, including money or material things. And she takes this job modeling at the mall, like, being a showgirl, which I don't even know if those exist anymore, but she just, like, shows cars at the mall. And she runs into Lynette and Tom there. She's a bit embarrassed. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of it, she is her electricity gets cut off, and that's the final straw. And she decides to dig up the passport that she burned because she was so mad about the slave labor. That's where we draw the line. We discovered where Gabby draws the line with things.
Which is slave labor.
Yeah, slave labor. So she burned Carlos's passport because she was so furious about it, and she digs it up.
Mm-hmm.
And she gets him out of jail. She gets him out on bail with that passport. And it's about moving on from your old lifestyle and figuring out how to acclimate without your basically caregiver. I'm going to call Carlos a caregiver. Then it's also about moving on from your bitterness towards your husband for this heinous act that he committed as well, and why you would move on from that.
I mean, I definitely think, too, like, with all these storylines, you run into, like, moving on from, like, a type of betrayal.
Yeah.
Because, like, Carlos betrayed her by lying about, or not by lying, but doing something horrible.
Yeah.
You know, Susan's dealing with Carl's betrayal with Edie. Lynette's dealing with the possible betrayal of Tom. And then as we go into Bree's storyline, it's pretty obvious where that betrayal comes from.
Yeah. So with Bree, Rex had a heart attack while he was fucking Macy Gibbons. The ultimate time to just have your heart go out on you. Mm-hmm. Is it symbolic? I don't know. His heart gonna take it.
Yeah.
Infidelity. In his own infidelity.
Yeah, his own.
Yeah. So he had a heart attack while he was prostituting with Macy Gibbons. And it causes this whole throwdown between Macy and Bree. And Bree decides that she is going to ruin Rex's life. She is going to take all his money, his family, and his dignity.
Finally.
Yes. It was a banger of a line. And so Rex returns home from the hospital after that whole thing. And Bree at first is like, I'm not going to take care of him. But then Andrew and Danielle guilt her into it because that's just who they are as her children. They're evil. Yeah. And Bree does it because that's who she is, the mom. And she's doing this, but she's angry about it. And Rex is trying to convince her that she still has feelings for him. And she goes to the pharmacy to pick up his meds. And the pharmacist is like, gonna be a while for this recovery. And she's like, I just can't. And she asks the pharmacist out on the spot. And he's another guy that I am like, am I being gaslit into thinking he's hot? Like, kind of average.
We're going to discuss this in this episode because I have same thing. I'm curious.
Is he hot? I don't know. But she goes on a date with a pharmacist and she has her hair in a beehive hairdo and it's not okay.
She literally looks like she's going on a date in 1956. I'm like,
she invites him in to talk to Rex and it is horrifying. But also maybe I don't know. I've never lived with a significant other and broken up while living with them and dated. I don't know what this protocol is. But she goes on the date. Andrew catches them. Probably high. Because he's been smoking pot. That also happened in the previous episode. Mm-hmm. And he's like, she's a liar. Don't listen to anything she says to the pharmacist.
Yeah.
And then Bree comes clean to Andrew about the infidelity with Rex. And Andrew takes back everything. He's like, Mom, leave his ass. Which is a shining moment for Andrew.
Well, yeah, he like doesn't believe her at first. And Rex, for once in his life, does something good and admits it to Andrew so he doesn't resent his mom for no reason.
Yeah, Andrew's like, I talked to Dad and he said it's true. So it comes full circle. We like to see Andrew making some sense once in a while. I don't think I killed him last week.
He's just so intense about everything. He reacts so big to everything. I'm like, damn. A little impulsive,
but yes. So it's about Bree moving on from the betrayal of Rex and reconnecting with her son and going on a I'm not even going to call it a hot date. It was just a date. It mm-hmm. wasn't hot. It was just a date. So that's where we are. Our death count is still at 2 with Mary Alice Young and Miss Martha Huber.
Yes.
We don't know much about Mrs. Huber at the end of the episode. I believe that they find her.
They find her, but quick note, the only thing that really happens with Paul is he's, like, getting nervous about mm-hmm. Martha's search. So, like, he digs up her ring and plants it in Mike's garage.
Yeah.
So that, I'm assuming, will come back at some point. But
yeah, they forget about it.
Yeah, that plot point's just ignored. That happens. But that, so that is a little note. Yeah. But that's really the only, I mean, her sister shows up to just look for Martha, but she believes that she's dead.
Yeah.
And her sister's weird and eccentric, just like Martha was. So it's kind of a fun dynamic, Felicia. I guess. Felicia.
Yeah, I like Felicia. I was hoping we could have a twin situation where they just bring Mrs. Martha Huber, the actress, to be her twin sister.
Yes, that could have been a good idea. Well, the actress that plays her sister, Felicia, she's in the show Frasier. She's like his manager, and she plays like kind of a crazy character on that too. So this actress like just gets these weird roles, but she's really good at it though. I like her.
Yeah, she's a character. So we're left with some mysteries, like what's gonna happen when they find Mrs. Huber. Mm-hmm. Will Zach and Paul ever move? Will Julie and Zach fuck? Can Kendra come back? That's my personal question.
I would love for Kendra to come back.
Well, people... Oh, no, I already said that one. What was in the trunk? We have left the trunk. What will John's mom do to Gabby? We haven't seen John in a minute. Missing John. Will Carlos get out of jail? Which is looking like he will. And how hard will Rex be fucked by Bree's lawyer? That's my question as well. Those are some of those are my personal questions. So with that being covered, we're on to Desperate Deeds.
Desperate Deeds. Mine's kind of short, so I guess I can go first for Desperate Deeds today.
Mine's short too.
Oh, okay. Well, I feel like we spent a lot of time on the recap, so it kind of works out.
Quick and dirty. It's okay, you guys. It can't always be a story.
I mean, mine's just kind of basic, but basically my desperate deed was like... back in like late October.
Oh, this is recent.
I guess.
I'm nervous.
No, I was just feeling really sad and alone. So I downloaded Bumble and then I deleted it the next day. And then I did that 4 times in a row, like in 1 week.
You didn't tell me.
Like this. I kept downloading it. And then the next day I'd be like, fuck this. And then by the end of the night, I was like, okay, I'm going to download it again. So I had to keep creating my fucking profile because I was like full on deleting each time. Because I was like, I'm not going to go back. So yeah, I had a desperate week where... 4 times. Four whole times.
God.
So stupid. And every time, it was just so stupid. I was like, they're going to ban me from this app.
You never
they're
going to
think I'm spamming.
I knew that you like maybe dabbled in it, but you never told me this.
It was pointless and came to nothing. So trust your gut, folks. If you're not feeling it, you're not feeling it.
I think we talked on day 4. I remember a conversation where you were like, I'm just... gonna just wait it out. I'm just done for a minute. I'm done trying to date. I remember that conversation specifically.
Yeah, because like, I had like a manic week where I was just
like,
kept
yeah, girl, like these men are trash. Like,
oh my god. So yeah, that happened.
It's hilarious.
October was a rough month.
That was so recent. I was expecting you to be like 2004.
Oh no.
Oh my god.
No.
Oh, we're good. Yeah. I made myself a promise, you guys. I'm single and mingling. It's not going well. But I told myself I'd give myself a month and then I'll try an app.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like them. That's my truth. I hate them. They make... Actually, let's just make this my desperate deed. I used the apps last summer for a while, for like a month or two.
Mm-hmm.
I've used them on and off throughout the years. Dating in LA is rough, ups and downs. And I would get them and I would have them for a while. There was a particular time where I was feeling lonely and sad and my Hinge was my drug of choice there.
Hinge was my drug of choice. That's my favorite way to describe a dating app now. What's your drug of choice? And when I say drug, I mean dating app.
Yeah, like Tinder is like...
I can't do Tinder.
No, Tinder is the equivalent of like alleyway ecstasy that is not ecstasy at all.
It's just cut with horrible things.
But Hinge was my choice and I... This says a lot about me. So yeah, I was swiping for a while, and obviously I was, I don't, it's not swiping, it's liking people and liking stuff. Mm-hmm. And I was liking people and they just like weren't really liking me back. And I got a ton of likes. I got a ton of likes. I did in the first couple weeks. And I don't mean to shit on physical appearance, but it was literally guys that I would never in a million years be attracted to. Always, all of them. There'd be like 20 of them in a row. Mm-hmm. And I'd be like excited. Like I'd go and check it and be really excited to see who, what, who. And I would just come out with like nothing. And I'm like, okay, I have a lot of questions. It sparked a lot of questions for me to the point. Like I was having, I had several full mental breakdowns that I didn't tell anybody about. But I did ask Jordan. This is my desperate question. And I was like, am I ugly?
That's all these apps do is make you second guess yourself. It's so stupid.
It was my most desperate moment. And my
just
most
so everybody
desperate
knows Julia's not ugly. Like, Jesus Christ.
And it's okay if you think that I am. I don't think I'm ugly. I don't think anybody should think that they're ugly. Everybody's beautiful in their own way. But I was just like, these apps are heavily appearance-based. And I can't get a date of somebody that I think is attractive to save my life. And I think I'm just ugly at this point. So that was my desperate question, my desperate feeling. Am I ugly? And so that's actually, I haven't downloaded an app since then because that was a low point. I was like, I know that I'm not, but I'm feeling these ways. And I
no,
feel
these
desperate.
Apps fuck with your head. It's like doing a drug because you get really excited when you do talk to someone cool. And then it usually fizzles. So it's just kind of like, Jesus Christ. Like you're just like.
Say, which is rare.
Yeah, it is rare.
So, wow, feeling defeated now.
And on that note.
Yeah, on that note, let's get into these desperate housewives. We're excited. Like we said, season 1, episode 12, put it on and watch it and come back or just breeze on through to our recap that we're going to get into. The one thing you need to do first, though, is sit back, relax, and buckle up.
Buckle up.
Season 1, Episode 12, Every Day a Little Death. Susan and Edie spark a unique friendship as she comes clean in her role with Edie's house fire. Mike cuts it close with his boss as his investigation stalls. Bree finds her beau, Georges, getting a little too close for comfort, shooting himself in the foot with their affair. While on house arrest, Carlos focuses on starting a family at any cost. Lynette can't find her zen and tells a sickening lie to try and find it. The residents of Wisteria Lane learn the brutal fate of Martha Huber.
Life and death, baby.
Life and death. It all comes full circle.
There can't be life without death.
Very true.
Every ending's a new beginning. One door closes, a window opens.
We just have all these like motivational quotes everywhere. That's what we should decorate the studio with.
Like tchotchkes.
Yeah, we have like an arts and crafts night where we like paint these ourselves. Yeah,
where we like make really macabre, like
really dark.
Really dark. Inspirational quotes that are just all about death.
Yeah.
It's a part of life. Well, I personally loved the theme this week. I am fully into haunts, ghosts, deaths, everything like that intrigues me. And I like talking about life and death and beginnings and endings and things like that. So this theme was, it made me feel better this week after a very long, exhausting week. Should we just dive in up top?
Yeah, let's dive in.
Martha is dead.
She is, yeah, she is dead in the ground, super not maybe dead. An inch under instead of 6 feet.
Super shallow.
Very shallow grave.
She's actually
very easy to find.
Above ground.
Yeah. It's a mound, like one of those, yeah.
Nobody talked about the blender yet, though. When they found the body, they were like, this blender, too.
They didn't give a fuck.
The blender is long forgotten. But we learn a bit about Martha with Mary Alice Young's voiceover. We'd love to start it off that way. Martha waited her whole life for something exciting to happen to her, and I am aligned. I relate. I'm still waiting for something exciting. As a child, she hoped that she'd be kidnapped. I think it was by pirates. I think I just didn't finish the thought.
Yeah.
My note just says, hope she'd be kidnapped.
Yeah.
So, okay. Teen, she hoped to be discovered by Hollywood. As a young woman, she hoped to marry another young millionaire. And none of that happened. What a shocker. Nothing exciting ever happened to her. And it wasn't until she was murdered. Her death was the most exciting thing to happen to her. And I panic about that every day of my life. I'm like, is that going to be the thing?
No, low-key, I'm like, damn, I don't want to end up as a Martha Huber in my life.
Yeah. In her last moments, it occurred to her that in addition to being boring, like, her life was cruel.
Yeah.
And lucky for her, death was far more merciful. That's what we open with. And it's another banger. We don't always get a banger of an opener and a closer, but I was in.
I know. Mary Alice came in swinging.
Came in. And this cuts to the investigators finding Martha's body. And they're like, yep, confirmed. They hold up the missing person. They're like right next to her face. Yeah, this is her.
Yeah. Right? Like, easy peasy.
And then the media rolls up and this weird cop, Officer Jackson, is talking to the dead body because, of course, this has to happen.
Oh, yeah.
Tells her to her face that her face is going to be on the front page of every newspaper. And Officer Jackson thought he saw her smiling. And
yeah, she's like smirking about it. They actually did make the corpse like had her look.
Mm-hmm. Do you think they're going to have an open or closed casket? I think open.
I mean, they should.
Yeah. So the cop delivers the news to Felicia, Martha's sister, who is watering the lawn, and she just drops that hose. She is so stunned. The word of the tragedy spread across the lane, but people were going about their lives as they always did, blissfully unaware. And this is where we cut to Susan, and we'll get into that in a minute. All the women get these little phone calls about how Martha Huber is dead. They get the news. They spread it around.
Yeah.
But after they all get their phone calls, they, like, gather outside of Felicia's house because they're rubbernecking. They're being nosy neighbors. And Felicia is talking to this detective, and she, like, sees everybody outside, and she calls them vultures. They're pretending to care. They just want the sorted details. And the detective's like, no, they just want to show support. And he's dumb. He's not on it. That's not why they're there. They just want to know.
She's right. I mean, that's what I like about Felicia. She is to the point.
She's with it.
Yeah.
So human beings feed on misery is what she says. Let's give them what they want. She goes out and she delivers the most, like, on point speech. She gives them all the details that you would see in a murder documentary.
Yeah. She's like, she was murdered violently.
She reads them the CSI sheet.
She's like, my favorite part, though, is when she's like, the good news is she was not molested.
Yeah. And I'm like, my God. Are they making a dig about, like, Martha Huber? I don't know. It just was, yeah. She says that she was buried alive. There was dirt in her lungs, so they think she was buried alive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Paul, after hearing the speech, I was like, Paul has the muscles on him. He did some fucking damage on that body.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, she recounts it. Everybody looks uncomfy, and she ends it. Hard stop. She's not molested. Hard stop. Everybody's looking comfy. And then she turns to go back inside and she's like, but there's an estate sale coming your way.
Yeah, she's like, in lieu of funeral, we're going to be having an estate sale.
No personal check. She's like, cash only.
Oh, man.
Dang, under the table.
Brutal.
So that's what's up there. That was our opening. And then we are hit with the storyline. So I was thrilled. It was, like, quirky and upbeat in a weird way.
It was fun. It was that fun tone that I think the show tries to hit of, like, dark comedy.
Yeah, it nailed it this time. Mm-hmm. I like when shows can talk about death and not be too overbearing with it.
Absolutely.
Where you're not contemplating too much about your own life and death. Is there anybody in particular you want to start with?
Do you want to just jump in with Susan?
Yeah, Susan's always a strong contender.
Yeah.
Some of these storylines didn't slap as hard as we thought they were going
to. No, I do think we got some filler stories.
We got a lot of fluff two women in particular. I don't want to name names, but you'll know that when we get there.
Yeah.
So Susan skips over to Mike's house.
Oh, my God.
Breaks and enters. She's like, hey, Mike, I'm here.
Yeah.
Just walks in. I think it's so uncomfy. Like I said, we don't do that in LA. Mm-mm. You better have two lock. You better have an entry door and then a door to your household. And nobody better have that key.
Yeah. No one's busting in.
I know. This apartment I'm looking at has two doors. That's a front and a back door.
Oh, shit.
And I'm like, dangerous? Maybe. I'm like, I like to live on the edge.
So. Hell yeah.
She skips over and breaks and enters. And she says, she tells Mike she finished the book. So he can take her out to celebrate. And for a moment, I thought she meant that she finished reading a book. And I was like, so your boyfriend should take you out for that. And then I
kind of sounds like something Susan would do, though.
No, I thought that for a while.
Yeah.
And then it hit me that she's an illustrator. So yeah.
She finished her book. Like the one she's writing. She finished
her work. And he says, can we rain check? And Edie walks out of the kitchen.
I feel like Mike should have been like, by the way, Susan, Edie hired me.
Yeah.
It's not like Edie hired him that day. Like, she was there working with him. So why does Susan not know about that? Yeah. What the fuck?
They're looking over plans to rebuild her new house because the insurance check came through. And so she has money to build her house. But Mike is not a construction worker. Let's recap that. He's a plumber. And she's like, I want him to do all my plumbing needs. And I'm like, how integrative is like a plumbing job on these houses?
Yeah.
So just, and then Edie's like, you won't see him for months. I'm going to be riding him hard. She says it like that.
Oh my God.
And I just love that she has no boundaries. She doesn't play by anybody's rules. No. She knows what she's doing. And then Susan makes a jab about Mike. If there's a guy who can do it, I know that he can go the distance. And I'm like, all these sexual innuendos.
A lot of innuendos, yeah.
Calm down, you guys. And then she makes out with him harder than I've ever made out with anybody in my entire life.
She smashed her face against
his. It was like frat party makeout.
She was like, you see this man? That's mine. This is very bizarre.
And
yeah.
Edie was like, she's clearing
her. She's like, we're on the clock.
Yeah. She's like, I don't pay you to fucking make out with your girlfriend.
Yeah.
And then she gets the call from Felicia and they found Martha.
Yeah.
So then the next time we see Susan it's nighttime. And she sees Felicia getting groceries out of her car. Mm-hmm. And she makes a strong approach and offers to help her. I've never offered anybody, maybe my grandma, to get groceries out of her car.
Yeah.
Never a stranger.
I also just love how, like, Susan just stares out her kitchen window a lot, I guess. Because she's always, like, watching people and running out and being like, I saw you doing this. It's like, okay, she's basically Martha.
Yeah.
Watching her neighbors.
I'm trying to think when I grew up in a house that had, like, I was on a street. Because now our view isn't onto the street. Mm-hmm. Nothing ever. I live in a cul-de-sac. Like, nothing happens here.
Yeah.
But I remember sometimes I would look out the window as I was doing dishes. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. Susan's sink is right in front of her window.
Yeah.
Onto the street. Just prime people watching.
Yeah, but that's true, I guess. And she has that, like, little breakfast nook thing with the windows.
Yeah, she's got a cute house.
I love her house.
How much do you think that sells for? Have one like that? So Susan says to Felicia, she's sorry. It must be hard, like, everything that she's going through. And, Martha must have felt helpless. Or she must feel, Felicia might feel helpless. And Felicia's like, no, I'm reading all of her journals. She has a ton. And it's going to provide some insight. She kept them for every year, wrote every mundane detail about her life and everybody's life. And that's some commitment right there. Mm-hmm. I have a journal. They tell us in these days that it's good for you to journal, good for your mental health. I don't write every detail of any day ever. I write notes that make no sense. Even to myself, when I look back at them, mm-hmm. sometimes I'm like, what?
Yeah. Like, I've tried to start a journal like 18 times and I'll do it for like 3 days and then I just can't stick to it.
One time in college, I wrote a note to myself about how I gave some guy my number, like a friend's neighbor, mm-hmm. and I was, like, really proud of it. I was like, I just did it, like, out of the blue. I don't have any recollection of this. It's in a journal.
That's so weird.
I told my dad about it. I'm like, because he's like, do you ever just, he's getting older. He's like, do you just forget stuff? And I'm like, I do all the time.
Do you just forget?
I'm like, I forget everything. Oh, I don't even know who this man was. And I felt it was important to write it in my journal. Nothing. Well, so anyway.
I'm glad you wrote it down.
Yeah.
Martha. It's not lost to history.
Yeah. Martha Huber wrote every boring thing about her life down though. And Felicia says she won't give them to the police until she's read them all because she doesn't want family secrets coming out. But flashes are happening. Flashbacks are happening for Susan to mm-hmm. when she burned the house down and Martha found out. And Martha was blackmailing her. Let's recall that was like episode 4, 5, or 6. I don't remember. So she panics.
Yeah.
She goes and runs to Julie and says, I am screwed. Julie is the typical chill queen, and she's just rolling her eyes, thinking about Zach, thinking about kissing him, kissing his crazy lips.
Oh, yeah.
And says, Mom, you're overreacting. And Susan says, everybody's going to find out about the measuring cup. Everybody's going to lose it. She's, like, tearing her hair out. This is me.
She's freaking the fuck out. And Julie's, like, so mature, and she's like, you just need to tell Edie then. Like, you need to talk to her. She's already got her insurance money, so it's not going to, like, jeopardize that.
Yeah. And then Susan says, there's a chance she didn't write about it, right? And Julie's walking out of the room. She's like, even I put it in my journal. It was too good. And Susan loses it even more.
Well, and then Julie's like, Edie will understand. Just reason with her. And fucking Susan's like, are you high? Like, at Julie. She's like, Edie hates me. And I'm like, that line was funny.
That line.
Me
too. The way she said it. And that's why you're going to have to get on your knees and grovel and suck up to Edie Britt. And I love that this is happening. It's about damn time. Everybody's bowing down to the queen.
Mm-hmm.
Mike comes home later. So Mike also has a storyline of his own happening,
mm-hmm.
which, surprise, does he have a personality without
Well,
Susan?
We haven't, like, seen the storyline in a minute, so it's kind of like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He's, like, doing some weird shit that Susan still doesn't know anything about.
Yeah. Been dating very him odd. For a while. All these people have aged a year. I guess they've been dating for a long time.
Yeah.
So Mike comes home to find his house broken into. His boss came in and stole all his money and all the info he gathered about his neighbors and left him an ominous message. He's fired and his replacement's coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike kind of like throws the papers around.
Yeah. Oh,
damn it. So that's what happens there. Then we cut back to Susan. She's rolling around the site of her own arson, Edie's house. And Edie's looking at the houseplants again, and Susan says she envies her, and Edie's like, why? Why do you envy me?
Yeah, she's like, oh, why the hell would you? Like, the way she says it. Oh, my God.
This is, like, yes, mm-hmm. how you talk to the person that is bugging the fuck out of you. And Susan's trying to play it off like it's a good thing. She says, you get to build the dream house, your dream house for free. It's almost a good thing. And Edie's like, I can't replace my memories.
Yeah.
And I remembered for a split second that Edie has a son.
Oh, yeah, that's right. She does.
I'm like, where is he at?
Yeah.
And she says she can't replace her memories and things, so it's not that good. And she's like, do you want something? And Susan's like, no, I just want to see how you're holding up. And Edie's like, my friend died, so...
Yeah. And no one wants to, like, go to her funeral.
Yeah, and nobody wants to go spread the ashes with me, and Susan volunteers to go.
Yeah.
So we can talk about a scene that did happen.
The gals together.
Yeah, they were playing poker with Lynette. It was Lynette, Gabby, Susan, and Bree, all the ladies together. And Edie came over and was like, I want to go spread Martha Huber's ashes at Torch Lake. That's where Mrs. Huber's husband proposed to her. The late husband, he's already passed away. And everybody's like, oh my God, Edie, that's so sweet of you. She's like, I'm going tomorrow, so if you want to come with. Everybody had lame excuses. Like, Lynette's like, I don't have a sitter. And Gabby's like, I have to work for mm-hmm. fun. I just do it for fun.
Which, like, okay, you just made yourself look like a dick. You have to work for fun. Okay.
And then Bree says that she has to take care of Rex or something, take him to an appointment. And then Susan doesn't have an excuse and just tries to say that she's busy. And Edie just called her out. She's like, at least your friends had fucking better lies.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and Susan, like, Jesus Christ, Susan, you look, that's like. She looked bitchy as fuck.
Bad look. You don't even work. Okay, I guess Susan does work.
She finished her book.
Yeah,
she didn't
work. Finished her book.
Yeah, we saw.
She agrees when she goes to see Susan that she's going to take the ashes with her to the lake. The next time we see them, and I might have missed something, I'm not sure, they're just changing a tire on the side of the road.
I think they're, like, driving there and, like, the tire just...
Is there a segue? Is there a scene where the tire pops off?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think it's just a scene to get, like, them to have a conversation and to show that Susan's, like, desperate.
Desperate.
I love when we use our title in this.
Yes.
But she's, like, desperate to, like, do anything for Edie, and Edie's like noticing that.
She's
like,
what the fuck? I was just caught off guard. I was like, all of a sudden they're changing.
Yeah, no, it was, there's, I feel like a scene got cut.
A little bit of something.
A scene got cut.
Yeah, so Edie's like, bet you were a cheerleader. So, okay, I forgot how weird this is. Bet you were a cheerleader in high school. Girls like, you were always a cheerleader. Clear skin, honor roll. And Edie talks about how she was the girl who was friends with the freaks and smoked on the loading dock, and everyone hated us. And I'm like, this is a bit dramatic.
I'm also like, all right, y'all were both just stereotypes, I guess.
Nobody
like,
cares about high school.
Yeah, like, why do they always, like, on these kinds of shows, like, bring that up?
If you're still talking about high school, stop.
Yeah, like, I love you, Edie, but maybe bring up anything else.
There was somebody I spoke to. Oh, I had a friend once that she talked about high school a lot, and I was like, we were, like, 25. I was like, I don't, like, let's
it's just not relevant, you know? Like,
it's not relevant. I'm like, me, I don't care what your SAT score was. Mm-hmm. I don't even remember my SAT score. Like, I don't remember this. I don't remember anything. So they're talking about high school, though. And Susan was like, thank God, like, leave that behind. We that's what we do. We leave it behind. And Edie's like, do we? Everyone, like, still leaves me out. And you still pull the wool over everyone's eyes. Mm-hmm. And I got to give her a point there. It's true. And Susan's like, what? And Edie says, you paid for the gas, came on this trip, you're changing my flat. And why are you doing that? You mm-hmm. want something. No, I know it. Feel it in my bones.
Yeah, and she's basically like, you're not allowed, we're not going anywhere until you fucking tell me.
Yeah, and Susan tries to play it off. Mrs. Huber's death must have been hard for you, and I wanted to help you. And I haven't always treated you well, and I want to make amends. And I'm not buying it. Nobody's buying it.
Just because Susan's got that chihuahua energy. She's not even, like, she's a... I guess Terry Hatcher's a good actress by showing that Susan's a bad actress. Like, yeah.
Yes. I'm not sure. If I have to give advice to anybody, learn how to lie.
Yeah.
Learn how to lie well. Susan's teaching me that. Mm-hmm. Terrible liar.
Terrible.
Can't even say
But Edie anything. Sees right through it.
Yeah, I can't say anything with conviction, I guess. So Susan ends up saying, for what it's worth, I would have talked to you in high school. And Edie says, of all the lies you just told me, that is the worst one. So,
and she's not wrong. Like, what does Susie even fuck? Like, well, Susan, just shut the fuck up. Like, yeah, just take the L with the high school thing.
Try
like,
and be chill. Just try and be chill.
Yeah.
My other line of advice, just try and be chill.
Yeah.
Might not work, but try. Next thing we see, Mike, back to Mike. He rolls up to this nice white house.
Like, it looks like a fucking plantation.
Yeah,
so are they in the south? Like, what's going on?
Did you just read my mind? I was thinking plantation, but I was like, is that like a phrase I should use? It did look like a plantation.
It totally did.
So it looks nice, huge, like historic. The boss is there and offers him a single malt, which gross. And Mike is frantic. He says, I want it back. The maps, the pictures, the guns, the money. Dang, okay. He
takes his weird secret job very seriously.
Yeah, mob shit. And then the boss says, the money is mine. And you will never get someone back. Or, okay. Mike says, you will never get somebody who cares as much about finding... Can you say her name?
Isn't it Deirdre?
Big
is it Deirdre?
D. I don't know.
This Why chick. Can't I remember this?
I even watched, we watched the subtitles on too.
Yeah.
I know how to spell it, but I actually didn't hear how they said it. Her name is D-I-E-D-R-E. Pronunciation?
So Deirdre?
Yeah. Big D. You'll never
it's
get somebody
fine. Who cares. It's fine, everybody. It doesn't
much
matter.
As I do. And the boss is like, why? Because you love her so much. And he's like, you left her. You didn't care about her. And I was like, is Mike a little player?
I know. They're making this seem pretty wild.
Yeah. So boss is like, you got a wife and you left her. So sorry for questioning your level of commitment.
And fair enough.
Mike pins him up against, Mike just goes ham, pins him up against one of his big columns of his plantation house. And the boss is like, you haven't been moving fast enough and I'm running out of time. And Mike's like, what? And he's like, I have a tumor and I'm going to die. And I need to know what happened to my daughter before I do. So yeah. We're getting the gist that like Mike was maybe in love. Sounds like Mike falls in love a lot.
sounds like Mike had a lover and something bad happened. And now I guess they got to find out. I don't know why he's so determined.
Yeah.
And I want to know what happened. Like, was he married to someone else? And then I don't know.
I want to know about his ex-wife that apparently died that
we know covered. She existed because this guy claims he married someone else. So,
yeah. So he's not lying about that part.
Yeah.
So that's that. I guess we can hop to Mike. The end of that scene, we eventually cut back to Mike and they chill because the guy said he had a tumor. So Mike unpinned him and they sit and they drink.
Yeah.
And the boss says, "I'm sorry, I question your commitment." And he pulls, and then Mike pulls out a photo of him and the chick, a sepia toned photo, sepia, whatever you call it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about.
Like it was
about.
Taken in 1905.
Yeah. And Mike is looking young and hot in that photo. He looks so hot. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is cute. And the boss is like, if someone hurt her, I want them dead. And we need to be really sure. And I'm like, we're back at a hit. Another hit is going to happen.
Yeah.
So that's what's up there. And he's like, okay. The boss is like, how sure do we need to be? You already killed for her once. One of them says that to the other. So we know that this chick, a lot of people are killing for her.
People are obsessed with her.
And actually, I kind of want that. If I'm dead, I want people, like, killing me.
Oh, yeah. If I die under mysterious circumstances or something happens to me, I need whoever I'm with to, like, spend the rest of their days finding what happened before they're allowed to move on. And that's on that.
I saw this reels and I sent it to you where it was the girl and she's like, my husband said, till death do us part. She's like, and then what?
Yeah. Like, that was fucking funny. Oh my God.
So yeah, that's the kind of energy that I want. So that's what's up there. But let's go back to Edie and Susan. Now they're in a canoe on a lake. They went from changing the tire to the canoe on the lake. No cuts in between. They're just out there. Edie needs a moment before she throws the ashes and she starts to cry and she says, I'm so grateful. And Susan's like, I know Martha was a good friend to you. Mm-hmm. She's like, Susan's just at this point doing her due diligence. And Edie's like, no, I'm grateful to you. And Susan's like, what? Edie says, I was such a bitch to you. And here you are with me. You stepped up and no one else would. And I thought you had an ulterior motive and I was all wrong.
Poor Edie, like the emotional manipulation.
Oh my God. Because this is how it happens, though. This is always like, it's just too close to real life. This shit always happens. You're like, I was so wrong about it.
And then it turns out everything you ever thought was right.
Trust your gut.
Yeah, trust your fucking gut.
And she says, you're such a good person, Susan, and I'm such a bitch. And Susan's like, no, I'm not a good person. Edie says, Martha may be gone, but God showed me I'm not alone. I'm grateful I have a true friend. And Susan just goes, Edie, I burned your house down.
I feel so bad for Edie at this moment, though. It's like Edie's being so emotionally, like, vulnerable. I'm fucking, oh my God.
Yeah, it made my stomach go in all types of knots. Might have had diarrhea after this.
Yeah.
And Susan breaks it down. I thought you were sleeping with Mike. I knocked over a candle, and the rest is history. And Edie throws the ashes on Susan. Face.
Oh yeah, covers her. It says, and Martha,
row me back now, right now. And she does. Susan grabs those oars, and that's what she deserves. I think she should have been flipped. She should have been flipped, yeah, in the water.
I think Susan got off easy, honestly.
Yeah, it's not enough to have the dead woman's ashes thrown on you.
Hell no.
Actually, Martha Huber deserved more than to be thrown on Susan. So Susan and Edie get home, and Susan says she's racked with guilt. And I'm like, is she?
She always gets what she got, what she wanted this whole fucking time.
She's not feeling guilty. She's feeling scared because she had a whole meltdown in front of her daughter about how scared she was about it.
If the journals didn't exist, she wouldn't have told Edie.
Yeah, she would have never told Edie. So I don't think she's racked with guilt. That's lie number 10,000. And I don't think it's suffered a possible. I don't think it's possible to be suffering more than I'm suffering. And Edie says, "I'd like to put that theory to the test." And Susan's like, "Just know I'm sorry."
Yeah.
And I noted she still has human ashes on her.
I know, she didn't even brush that shit off, really.
Edie's like, "I'm not."
Take off your sweater and wipe your face, bitch! Like, what the fuck?
Do something. I mean, if I was Edie, I would have just left her at the mountain. You're not getting in my car. you're not getting in my car at that point. I think people are too liberal with who they give rides to.
I know, and her car's nice. Like,
I've had friends be like, I've given a ride to this girl who was a bitch to me at this party. And I'm like, why? Why would you give her a ride home? I'd be like, sorry.
Yeah, my car only fits one.
No room.
No room for you.
Not going to your side of town.
Yeah.
I don't give a fuck.
Do you have gas money?
You were rude to me at a party. I've left $0 tips. Screw, fuck. I don't know. If you hate me for that, whatever. But I'm like, I don't even know what I'm trying to say. But like, I'm not ashamed of that. I think I was with you one time, and I don't even remember what the guy said, but he was rude as fuck to me.
Oh, at that wine bar.
Yeah.
I'll never forget that, actually.
And
that
I was horrible. Pissed. I don't even remember what he said at this point.
He was not nice to us.
But I gave him a $0 tip. I was like, you insulted. He insulted me.
Yeah, I don't remember what he said, but I remember it was rude. I just remember being shocked.
Yeah, he like mocked me. Like, happens a lot with my voice. I don't know what he did, but yeah, I don't think that Edie should have given her a ride home.
No.
And she did for some reason. And Edie says, I'm not going to turn you into the police. The insurance will want to investigate and delay my check. And there is something that I want you to do for me, though, Susan. I want to be invited to Tuesday poker. And I'm like, this bitch is crazy.
I'm like, Edie, why don't you just ask for something awesome?
Why do you want to hang out with them?
No.
Why do you want to hang out with them?
They don't like you. Why bother?
Don't hang out with people who don't want to hang out with you.
Yeah. Fuck no.
And not saying that I'll go over that you have to be nice to me. But yeah, it's nice to be asked. I kind of agree with that. It's nice to be invited and turn people down. And then Susan,
that is true.
Susan gives her all the details. It's a potluck. And Edie's like, I'm not bringing anything. And this is good. Thank you. And I said, Susan says thank you to her. And I said, she's thanking the girl that threw human ashes on her. This is all bananas. All these women's interactions here. I don't understand. And Edie goes on, I can't stand the thought of her ashes going down the drain because you're going to go shower them off. Let's put them on your front lawn so she can look at her house in the neighborhood. Susan's like, don't do it. But you can't be like, no, in this situation, you can't say no. And Edie's like, you owe me, and sprays her with the hose in the front lawn. And that's that on that.
So we finally, I guess, get closure on the fire situation, I guess. Like,
is it closed? I want to know who she was fucking that night.
Probably nobody important.
Nobody important.
Nobody worthwhile. Probably
the priest.
Yeah. Imagine. Oh man.
Oh my gosh. So I think it raised a few questions for me about female friendship, what you should want and not want, how you should ask to be treated by people.
Yeah.
So good storyline overall, the life and death.
It was fun. Yeah. It was like a good little.
Cute.
Yeah.
Next biggest storyline, I'd have to say, is Bree.
Yes, I agree.
It's very interesting to me.
Her storyline, first of all, did the NRA sponsor this episode?
I thought KFC did with another storyline.
They got it felt
NRA times KFC.
It was very
so American. That's the most American
thing ever. Extremely American plotline.
Yes.
So yeah, like basically Bree and George are they're hanging out. I don't even know what you would call it because Bree's clearly not romantically interested in him.
She did, and I'll call it out when it happens. Oh my gosh, she did a token move of when you have the ick, you do this.
Okay. So basically she's just trying to make Rex jealous. So every time he looks out the window and she gets home with George, like that's the only time she shows George any physical affection.
Yeah, she's all up on him.
Yeah, and so the main part of the story is George takes Bree on a picnic on his lunch break, I guess.
I don't fucking know.
And like he tries to like hold her hand and she kind of like pulls it away, which if I were him, I'd be like, oh, maybe I shouldn't give her what I'm about to give her. And then he like gives her a gift and it's a fucking gun, like some World War II
gun, an antique gun.
Yeah, it's like a nice one, which I did have to note because she starts like pointing it in the park. I'm like, only some white lady could fucking play with a gun in the middle of a park.
My gosh.
I was like, this is like so crazy right now. She's pointing it like she's in the park
dead on. Yeah, she has both hands on that gun in front of her chest
and she did not check to see if that shit was loaded.
No,
an NRA member would not be doing that shit.
It's blind.
It's terrible.
Yeah, it was not okay.
Yeah, so basically they then like go shooting. Like she take like late at night.
They like, go to
they go to some night? Weird like farm with a bunch of glass bottles.
Yeah.
And she gives a very detailed step by step on how to shoot a gun. Again, that was like the NRA being like, you better make sure this shit is like good. Yeah. Like
there I don't was know. So much legal around it.
Yeah. And she like shows George how to shoot and she's like doing like the typical like when you're golfing and the person's showing you how to golf and they wrap their hands around it. Like that's what she does for George. And he goes in for the kiss while she's explaining shit, which probably not the good time to like turn your head was when you're pointing a fucking loaded gun. And she like dodges it and he shoots himself in the foot.
Yeah.
Which leads to him like losing a toe. And he gives Bree this like crazy monologue about like how he's never kissed a beautiful woman. Incel it was energy. I was like, this is really incel scary.
Energy.
I was like,
it was
horrible.
It was crazy.
It was crazy. And then
he's like, I've waited my whole life. And I'm like, you're like 40.
Yeah, no. Like, maybe fuck? Older. Like, what on earth? And so like he gives her this whole speech and like basically they like end whatever the heck they're doing. But then he like shows up at her house
with his big ass boot
and his crutches, which literally he like makes a scene. He goes insane.
Also, this was the weirdest storyline. I never saw any of it coming. None of it.
It just every turn. I forgot like a lot of the storyline.
Yeah.
And I thought he was going to get like a boner or something when they were shooting. Like I thought that's where it was going. I don't know why. I was like, is this going to be like awkward? Like she's going to freak out about his dick. But then I was like, no. And then he shot himself. I'm like, oh yeah, now I remember.
Yeah. So the biggest thing I want to point out was when he touches her hand unannounced and unwanted.
Mm-hmm.
No, unwarranted.
She yanks her hand.
Yes, away. That is. And I wrote Bree has the ick.
But
that
then, like, when she gets the gun, she, like, grabs his hand.
Yeah. The ick can come and go.
But I feel like, okay, he's so obviously, like, infatuated with her. Like, what is she doing? Like, why is she shouldn't be surprised he's trying to kiss her. Like, he gave her a fucking, like, antique family heirloom.
Yeah, she should not have.
She shouldn't accept that.
She shouldn't have gotten so wet over that gift. She should have given it back.
Yeah, she's a gun nut, by the way, everybody. Yeah, Jesus Christ. Yeah,
if you couldn't tell, she's a gun nut.
She was like mesmerized.
You know when somebody's given you a gift that is way too big of a gesture and you should return it, like, if you don't like them.
No,
if
and, like...
If you don't like them, give it back because that's, like, this gave set the wrong precedence. He had all the green lights. Like, that's a green light.
She grabbed his hand, so she was...
So she yanked it away, and then he gives her the gift, gun nut, and then she grabs it hard and fast.
So, like, she is totally indicating that she's interested. So when he goes to kiss her, and he even says, he's like, I don't see why you should have been so surprised by that. Like, and...
Yeah... I mean, I agree with him. He had all the green lights.
Yeah.
And I agree. But yeah, when they're out at this abandoned place setting up the bottles to shoot, there's some talk where he says, I just want you to know, like, how much fun I've been having.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it means a lot to me. I almost forgot that I was lonely. And I wrote that he just feels like some nerdy guy who got a date with the prom queen. Like, he's hyping her up way too hard. And I'm like, you should be a little bit cooler about it.
No, he's being, like I said, incel. Like, he's so...
Yeah, it was incel.
It's, like, scary.
And then, yeah, Brie, her monologue is like a YouTube tutorial. I think I can learn to shoot better from Desperate Housewives. It was 5 steps that I wrote them down.
Very
I'm not
going
to repeat them to you.
Yeah, very clear, very punk. Yeah. I was like, oh, the NRA sent somebody to write this for them.
They definitely did. They were like, these are the points you need to hit. And that's when she does the gets behind him and he shoots himself. But I think you shouldn't have been trying to kiss somebody. That is not the time to kiss somebody.
No, like I said, a loaded. Yeah, that's no. Everything about that was bad. He should have kissed her like maybe after they were shooting.
It was incel energy that he even tried to. He couldn't wait. He didn't get the vibe. He wasn't okay. If there's ever a time that somebody wasn't reading a vibe, that was then.
Yeah,
the vibe was not there. And Brie also, when he says, I forgot that I was lonely, like she. This is the one yellow light, I would say, that he got. She said, we're just having fun. She said, it's been great. But she didn't say, like, you need to adjust your expectations or, like, this isn't – like, she didn't go into it, but she said, yeah, this has been fun.
So. Yeah, I'm going to have to say no. Yeah, I'm going to have to say no.
Big N-O there. And at the hospital, I did write down some of his speech, mm-hmm. and I just want to, like, tell you how desperate it was. He said, "I always dreamt that before I died, I would get to kiss a truly beautiful woman." It's all energy. And I start to feel, okay, I wrote in my note, that's how he starts, and I continued. And I start to feel like this is going to be a weird monologue as a note to myself. "I finally get the chance, and I end up blowing off a toe. I should have known this shit always happens to me." And he's like, "I'll get over it. But what I don't think that I'll get over is that you pulled away. Why did you do that?" And that's when he's like,
pathetic.
Yeah.
Sorry.
She rolled her entire head around.
Yeah, I couldn't even just roll my eyes. I had to roll my whole ass head.
And Bree says that she was caught off guard. Like, that's why she pulled away. And he's like, "Why did it surprise you were dating?" And that's when Bree says, oh, because he goes on, "You said you hated Rex. You said you'd never forgive him." And she's like, "You shouldn't listen to a person who has just had their heart broken." And I said, "Ain't that the fucking truth?"
I mean, that is the truth, but she was like,
we do crazy shit with broken hearts. We change our entire lives.
And
that's
fair. I think, yeah. And yeah, absolutely.
He said we tend to lie with our broken hearts. And then that's when he comes back over. His freak out happens. Because she says it's not wise for them to have a friendship. He's like begging her for friendship. Mm-hmm. He's like, "I don't care what we call it, just need you."
Yeah.
it's the bad look. And she says, "One day you're going to hope that I'm going to love you, and it's just not going to happen." And he is like crying and hobbling away. She tries to grab him because she feels bad, and I would too. And he falls down and like yells at her. And he's like, "I don't need anybody." And I didn't see it coming.
He, like, his hair, like, lights on fire while he's saying that. Not literally, but he, like, explodes with anger.
Good actor. He turned it on.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's, like, a Tony Award winning, like, Broadway guy.
Yeah.
He has, like, a big time
face of a Broadway actor. Yeah.
He's, like, big in that world.
Yeah, he is a good actor, and I guess we could talk about that. I don't know if he's attractive or not. I personally don't find him attractive.
I don't find him attractive either, but I also think, like, I don't think Rex is attractive either. No, I think Bree's got bad taste.
Rex is more attractive than this guy, but this is also, okay, they cast him perfectly. He is the guy that you would date after a heartbreaking breakup.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's kind of average looking.
And he's got a full head of hair.
Yeah, he has some pros and cons. Yeah,
like, but that's like when you're that age, like, yeah, I guess, and you're a divorcee or about to be.
He's interesting enough.
Yeah.
Like, he's the guy you date.
Pharmacist is a good job.
Yeah, he's a steady job after you've been dating. That pays
probably pretty, not as good as, you know, Rex, but still not bad.
Pharmacists make a lot of money.
Yeah, they make good money.
Yeah, they don't have to do much either.
Yeah.
They got the hookup, too.
And they have, like, normal business hours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Date someone with normal business hours. It changes your life. So, next up to bat, Gabby. It's going to be short and sweet. Nothing happens.
We actually don't. There's not even a lot of scenes. It's not even that nothing happens. There's, like, maybe four scenes, and one of them's super short, too. Like, one of her scenes is just when they're all playing poker.
Yeah.
So, like, basically she comes home from her job, her exhausting job of modeling all day with a bucket of KFC for Carlos's dumbass. And Carlos is like, there's a lot of good quotes. I will give them this. I wrote down a good amount of quotes. But, like, Carlos is, like, just being lazy as fuck at home because he can't do anything. And Gabby's regretting every decision she's ever fucking made.
Yes.
And
she's like, "God, he's home."
Yeah. And, like, she... Like, well, I guess in the beginning of the episode, we find out that he can't work because he's like on house arrest.
Yeah.
So she has to keep working, keep modeling, and he's like super nonchalant about it, acting like it's nothing.
Yeah, he got kind of schlubby in prison. He's like, "Whatever, can't work."
Yeah.
And I'm like, didn't you have a drive?
Weren't you like a workaholic? Yeah. Like, what are you talking about? And so then, like, they kind of get into it, and he's, like, giving her shit because she didn't go visit his mom in the hospital. And he's like, "You know, it'd be a great gift.
The worst.
Give her a baby.
This
like,
is the worst.
Give me a baby." And she's sitting there, like, look at our situation. Like, you might go to federal. Like, is he on crack? Like, what the fuck? And so I have to say, when she gets home, too, she gives him the food, and he's like, "Do you want some?" She's like, "I'm too tired to eat." And I'm like, That's why she's so skinny. I'm like, I could never.
Dreams.
I know. I wish I was like too tired to eat.
I'm never too tired. I sometimes eat right before I go to bed.
Yeah, fuck that. I'm like, so,
there's like
something. Hell no. I'm like, that's the energy I want. So basically she's like, hell no, I'm not having a baby. Like, especially already she didn't want one. And like, now look at their situation. She's like, fuck. And she's a model. She can't get pregnant. That's like her one thing she has right now. Like, what, yeah, what is
her
thinking?
Body. Don't take that away from her.
But they basically end a huge fight. And like, Carlos like tries to throw the whole I'm the man of the house shit in her or at her. And she's like, okay, but who's working? Like, so she takes his bucket of chicken, walks straight outside.
I love it.
And this bitch, he really has the audacity to say, I waited all day for that. I would have, like, I couldn't believe he said that. I was like, oh, my God. So she just eats the chicken across the street.
The audacity of these men.
Horrible.
This is how they act still.
I couldn't believe it. And so she, like, yeah. So that's kind of where that scene ends, basically. And then, yeah, we get her in, like, the poker scene with everybody. She's not, she's definitely not going to go do that Martha Huber, Ash situation.
Hello.
But, like, the main story, like, the, I guess the only thing that really happens aside from that is we find out that Carlos is, like, tampering with her birth control, which is the worst. This might be the worst thing anybody on this show has done.
Sociopathic.
Tampering with birth control?
Yeah.
Tampering with birth control.
Yeah, that's not okay ever.
Like,
I can't even fathom it. And get some birth control that you can't have a man tamper with, I guess, nowadays.
But I know, but
the pill was so prevalent back then. But also, that's way messed up. And I feel like I've heard of, not, I don't know anybody personally. I've heard of, okay. I've heard of women altering their birth control to try and get pregnant, unbeknownst to their significant other.
I think if you tell someone you're on birth control and don't take it, or if you tamper with someone's birth control and then you're having sex and the people aren't aware of the situation, like, that to me kind of is rapey.
Yeah, it's fucked up. It's not, I mean, okay, the sex can be consensual, but
But they aren't going into it knowing what is happening.
Yeah.
Truly.
Well, I had a cousin of mine get pregnant, and I panicked. I'm not even the pregnant one. I had a panic attack. I was like, I can't. I feel like I can't breathe. And everybody's like, why are you being weird about it? And I'm like, I don't know. It just makes me feel like, oh, my God, like a baby. Like, you're having a baby. Like, and I'm like, did she, like, want to have a baby? Because I didn't know if she had, like, a, like, was going steady with a partner.
Yeah.
She wasn't. And so I'm like, oh, my God, this just makes me nervous for myself. Like, if I just put myself in that situation. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I would freak out. But I told that to one of my other family members. I'm like, is this an accident? And she's like, it's not an accident. It's never an accident. And I was like,
what do you mean it's never?
But kind of. She's like, you know what you're doing. And okay, I was like,
but if Gabby's having sex with Carlos thinking that she's taking normal birth control, she's consenting to that. She's not consenting to having sex with him with tampered birth control.
True.
So
and birth control
me,
makes mistakes.
Well, of course. So that's why he will get away with it. Like, if she got pregnant, he would get away with it because, of course, it's 100%.
Because there's that 0.1%.
Yeah. But that's like, you're literally tricking someone into having sex with you without a condom, basically, at that point.
Yeah. There's an SVU episode where the guy pokes holes in his condoms.
I remember that episode. John Stamos plays the guy. Oh, my God. I love that you brought that up because I was just thinking about that.
It's fucked up.
He has, like, 300 kids. Not really,
women,
but there's a lot. I know. They all descend on him.
So similar. If anybody has a real life story of this happening to them, I'm interested. And I do think it's, I mean, no, it's sociopathic. It's not okay. Mm-hmm. That's like a God complex. Like,
yeah.
You're creating life. And that's where the whole theme plays into this. It's like, he is trying to create life so desperately because he has nothing else, I guess.
Well, and I guess it's just like, even if Gabby was down to have a kid, they are not in the position to have a kid. Like, why would he think that this is, like, an okay situation?
I don't know. People are crazy about babies. We're not crazy about babies.
Yeah.
So I think for us, we're like, what is everybody doing? But my family, I swear, I was talking to somebody about this the other day. I'm like, if I came to them and said I was pregnant with some random one-night stand hookup that I never spoke to again, don't even have his number, name, picture, I think that they would be thrilled for me because I'd be pregnant. And I'm like, but don't you, like, my family values, like, having a baby over, like, a stable relationship.
Like, but, like, even if, okay, so, like, let's pretend for a second that you went and, like, got a sperm bank, like, baby. Like, you got pregnant.
Oh, they'd probably be disappointed in that.
Because you chose to do it? Because it was your choice? Because
it was my choice.
Wait. Okay, but, like, it's one, what? What is wrong with people? You just want to bring a baby into this world without, like, being able to provide?
That's what I'm saying. I'm like, I don't know. I mean, you put it in perspective the other day. I'm apartment hunting. I can afford an apartment on my own in a major metropolitan city.
Yeah.
I work really hard for that. And, like, for some reason, that is not the same. It's not weighed the same to my family as, like, having a baby and a husband. I don't think they mean to make me feel that way, but that's certainly how they, that's the vibe.
I just think people have a warped sense of, like, especially with women, like, what we should be, what our goals should be.
Because it's it's an American thing. It's the white picket fence-y 1950s, like, when everybody had the same life.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, the era that my parents, specifically my dad, grew up in, that's what people did.
Yeah.
That's not what
you had, the stay-at-home life, and, like, but we, you know, I don't want to have to depend on another person for everything in my life.
Yeah, it's just carried through even 50 years later, just like everything else is.
And it's not like the world is short on humans. Like, no. We're honestly doing everybody a favor right now.
Yeah, you're just contributing to climate change. Yeah. That's another human that you create.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure what's going to happen with this storyline.
It's pretty nasty, though, and it really, like, Gabby and Carlos are both kind of terrible people in their own ways, and, like, they just, like, try to, every week I'm like, who's worse? This time it's Carlos, but yeah. We'll see what Gabby has in store for us.
I also have to say, I think it's coming from a place of insecurity for him, because he also has a scene where he's like, promise you'll never leave me. Like, she's getting ready to go model, and he's like, promise. Oh,
maybe he's trying to trap her then.
I think it's a multitude of things.
Yeah.
Because I think it's the insecurity of him leaving, of him going to jail forever, and her leaving him having nothing, and mm-hmm. being bored. And I think when people are bored, they're at their worst.
Yeah.
They're coming up with things that sound good, but it's just children.
Yeah.
And so they have a blowout about it, but that's essentially what happens. There's not really much more to cover there.
It's pretty short. And then we get our story of the week.
Yeah, I feel sorry for Lynette. It's hard to be a Lynette stan. I mean, episode 8, are we ever going to get back there with her?
I know, are we ever going to get, like, an actual storyline? Maybe.
This one is pretty vapid. It starts at yoga class, and Lynette is showing up with all the kids, because they fired Claire, I guess. Mm-hmm. She can't even go to yoga, but yoga is an upper middle class thing to do anyway. And the daycare center is full, and she, like, signs on a line, like, below. Like, she signs her kids in anyway, and the girl's like, what are you doing?
Not only is it full, but Lynette's trying to add not one child, but 4.
Yeah, and this nanny lady's like, other moms come early, plan ahead, sorry, we're not watching your kids. And I've never gone to a yoga studio with a daycare, so.
You know, she's already privileged as fuck to have that option.
Suburbia, okay. And Lynette gives a boring speech about motherhood. She says, I had to wake up at 5 a.m. This is the 10:30 yoga meditation. And none of the other classes have daycare, so this is what I have to go to. I had to drop the twins off at school. I have a sick kid.
Oh, that's right, she has two. I have two.
A sick kid.
That's right, she only has a 2 with her, my bad.
Yeah, she has a sick kid. That's the key word. And I just wrote, I like her better on meds.
So this kind of ties into what we were just talking about, but Lynette basically shames this lady for not caring. Like, I don't think this lady should have to be super, like, sympathetic to Lynette. Like, Lynette, she's right. The other moms got there first. It's that simple.
Yeah. And she's like, if I break the rules for you, I have to break them for every other mom. And then those moms who follow the rules get pissed. And we both worked in customer service. This is exactly how it works.
Yep.
It's like, if I give you this rate, like, I literally, like, have to do that for everybody. Yep. And I don't want other people bothering me because I'm trying to, like, read a book in the back.
Yeah, no, for real.
So and the girl even says, I'm trying to read my magazine. The honesty.
But I liked her. You know, honestly, Lynette was being such a fucking Karen in that scene. I was like, bitch, like,
it was annoying.
That's rude as fuck. Like, we get it. You have 4 kids, but you decided to have 4 kids.
Yeah.
That's on you. Like, that's on you. You don't get to give this lady attitude because she's doing her job.
Yeah. And then Lynette says, I hope one day you have tons of kids. And
The lady's like, I won't because I don't want them. Simple as that.
She's like, I don't have birth control that he can tamper with.
Yeah.
So then the next time we see her, she's giving the kids gum so that she can go play poker with the gals. Mm-hmm. She says, if you're quiet, I'll give you the gum. When she comes back up after the poker game, the gum is all in one of their...
In Party's hair.
Party. I was like, that's the one I identify as Party.
I know.
So it's in Party's hair. And, so then she shaves his head, and I feel like they need to stop trying to be like, Lynette is such a good mom, because they give her another opportunity as she's shaving her kid's head. She's like, I know I'm such a bad mom. And the kid is like, I think you're the best mommy in the world. And I'm like, stop. She's kind of like, I felt bad for her several episodes ago. I no longer do about feeling that way. Mm-hmm. It's just like, get over, like, Lynette, just get over it. Like, get past the feeling.
Go to therapy, not yoga.
Yeah, it's just stop complaining about that. Like, you're not a bad mom and you know it. So stop. Yeah. Either way, they end up back at yoga. Now her kid is bald because she shaved the gum out of his hair. She's early and she thinks that she's beat the rush, but the daycare's full again already. And she's like, what the heck? I was 10 minutes early. And the lady is like, when you said your son was sick, I didn't know he was this sick. And it's like, she thinks that he has cancer now.
And Lynette leans right into it.
Oh, man. And it breaks Lady's heart. And she's like, you go to class. I'll find room for your kid. And she's like, oh, my gosh. Thank you so much. Like, it is so hard. She continues to lie about it for another class or two.
Yeah.
And Marielle's young voice is over that serious illness was not a matter to be treated lightly, but making her yoga classes was a matter of life and death. And I'm like, this is how we're tying in life and death here.
Yeah.
Okay, we tie it in one more time because this lady from class comes up and hugs
Which was weird kid. As fuck. She's I panicked for Lynette in that scene. I was like,
She's like, I'm a survivor. And I'm like, mm-mm. Okay, and she hugs the kid, and he's like, mommy, am I gonna die?
And Lynette has this, like, moment of, like, do I embarrass myself in front of all of these people, or do I traumatize my child? And she picks the correct option, which is to not traumatize her child.
She straight up says what happened. She's like, no, people just think you're sick because I shaved your head, and everybody is disgusted.
I mean, it's pretty bad. Like,
like, that is the most accurate word. They were disgusted.
That breast cancer lady was, like, straight up, like, disturbed. Like, she was like, oh, my God.
She's like, what the fuck?
I couldn't even believe it.
And Lynette is quitting that studio. The road to enlightenment was now closed for her is what we end on. And mm-hmm. I'm just like, oh, my God. It's not, yeah.
That was a very embarrassing storyline for Lynette. Like, oh.
But it was, like, a little bit, yeah, lighter.
It was light, yeah. But she just has had a lot of light stories, so I'm kind of, like, ready for more meat.
Yeah. So we wrap up the episode with another Mary Alice Young voiceover. She says, death is enough. Inevitable. It's a promise made at birth to all of us. But before it comes, we all hope that something will happen to us. The thrill of romance. And there's Gabby and Carlos making out, making babies and with her ineffective birth control.
Yeah.
And the joy of raising a family. And it's like Lynette chasing her kids around and anguish of great loss. There's Mike looking at the picture longingly of him and Big D. And then we hope to experience something that makes our lives meaningful, but not all lives have meaning. Some people are on the sidelines waiting for something to happen to them before it's too late. And then there's the pharmacist, like, watching videos of Brie with his, like, little incel TV dinner. And I said, what the fuck?
Yeah. George is, he's
not okay.
He's slipping.
He's losing it.
Yeah.
Did Brie give the gun back, though? We never find out.
Oh, my God.
So that's where we wrap up with the episode. I fucking enjoyed it.
I thought it was a fun episode.
It was good.
I think it was fun. It had some fluff, but that's okay. I mean, I think when you're watching anything that has 24 episodes in a season, you're going to get some fluffy storylines.
Yeah. They can't all be killers, but I just thought, like, the theme was fun and I like how we touched on it mm-hmm. in ways that were unique and interesting. With that, let's hit some fuck, marry, kill.
Okay. Well, I'm going to kill Carlos, I think. I don't like this birth control thing, as very clearly I stated earlier.
Yeah.
Not okay.
How can you?
I'm going to marry Julie. She had a bit part in this episode, but her part was, like, basically telling her mom to, like, be a fucking adult, and I appreciated that. And then I'm gonna fuck. Damn.
Whoa, no one was fuckable this episode.
I mean, my default, I guess, is just Edie, because Edie's always looking good. And I do kind of like, you know, she gives no fucks. I like that about her. Like, when she walked to the poker game, was like, oh, you guys all play poker. She's like, anyway, like, yeah. The way she just handles shit like that, like, you know what, I'll give it to Edie this week for the fuck. I also liked her in her all-black getup for Martha's funeral. She looked good.
She's looking banging.
Yeah.
I will also kill Carlos.
Good.
If you were not going to go first, I was ready to say, I'd kill Carlos. Yeah. I was just going to chime in. I would kill Carlos. It's fucked up that you are messing with somebody's birth control, whether they're your wife or not. It doesn't matter. You don't mess with their medication. You don't mess with them creating life and carrying a baby.
It's disgusting.
Disgusting. That is where I draw one of line. Like, there's many lines. It's not the line.
That's a pretty big line, though. That's a
pretty big line. So, kill Carlos. I would fuck a young Mike from the picture, from the photograph.
Oh, fuck. That's right.
Mike.
He is hot.
Yeah, that Mike. I would do this Mike, too, but, like, oof, the young Mike.
Yeah,
that had me.
Yeah, he's hot.
Mary this week is a bit harder for me.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I picked Julie, because there wasn't, nobody was really marriage material this week.
I'm going to go with Julie as well.
Yeah.
I was thinking about giving it to Bree, but I was like, because Bree did say, like, she cut it off, but she didn't do it that well.
I'm not trying to marry someone that into her guns like that.
Oh, true. Then I plug. Yeah, so I'd say Julie. Julie was handling the situation, and she's like telling her mom the truth, as always. So that's where we are. We're pretty aligned there.
Yeah, I'm pretty aligned.
And for the housewife of the week, that's also a tough one. I'm going to have to nominate Edie.
I think I'm going to nominate Edie, too. I think we should go with Edie. I like that she got a little vulnerable. I like that she gives no fucks. I like how she's like, I don't know. I like how she handled the whole Susan burning down her house thing.
Yeah. I'm going to ride him hard. I'm going to be riding him hard.
She had some good lines. Phrasing. Yeah.
And I like that she threw the ashes of her best friend on some lady that she didn't like. But I also like the unique friendship that she's allowing to happen. I think, she's seeing the
positives.
Edie
and Susan definitely have that, like, frenemies vibe where they don't actually hate. It's like they need each other. They need each other to live their lives. And I kind of love it.
They're maybe the most interesting thing about each other. Mm-hmm. So I like that Edie, although there were times that I questioned her, like, even taking Susan back and stuff. Mm-hmm. I think she got the type of revenge that she wanted with, like, the hose, throwing the ashes. Like, it all came to a good point for Edie.
For sure.
And then for the Apple rating, are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. 3, 2, 1, 4.25. Whoa.
Ooh.
I did really like this
episode. Okay. Damn. Out.
You put that 3.5. Whoa. Let me go
3.75. I'm going to go 3.75.
Okay. Why?
I liked this episode, but I do feel like it was a bit stagnant in, like, the storylines. I guess we get a little bit more with Mike's backstory, which I liked, but it was kind of weird, like, Martha's body, like, the whole Martha thing to not have Paul in it even at all was a bit weird.
I was missing Paul and Zach and John.
I just feel like there's a lot of stuff that they kind of left to the wayside, and I get it. They kind of do that where they'll, like, leave a gap in some storylines, like an episode or two, just to kind of, like, you know, do other things. And I think this episode was a good character building episode because we got to see all the people, like, dealing with just kind of their own stories. But I don't know. It was a good episode. I wouldn't call it a filler episode, but I would definitely call it one of the more slower ones of the season. So I guess that's kind of why I'm going with 3.75. And Lynette's storyline, while it was, like, fun, it was just, like I said, I just feel like they underutilize her as a character. And this is, like, an example of that, I guess.
It's true.
I could have used more Gabby, because that storyline could have been a little more interesting.
Yeah.
With the birth control stuff. I mean, maybe we'll see more of it, but it was just kind of, I mean, they set it up that way, but, like, in this episode, I just felt like maybe bring in the birth control situation a little earlier in the episode and then give her more to do.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Because this dynamic of her and Carlos, I actually kind of like. We're seeing them together more. Mm-hmm. And it's not just him buying her shit. So I don't know.
She is way more likable when John's not around.
Yeah. Okay, so you're 4.25.
Yeah.
Tell me why.
I gave it high marks because I liked the theme and I thought it was well executed in a variety of ways. It wasn't all too heavy because, like, guilt was pretty heavy overall. Mm-hmm. And it worked. It got the 5 apples, but this one was, like, more lighthearted. So that's why I was, like, 4.25.
Yeah.
But it was, like, there was no storyline where I was like, how did the theme apply here?
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, there could have been more for Lynette and Gabby. That is why it's not a 5 for me, or even higher, because it was sparse for them. But it still was cute. I think Gabby's was the weakest because nothing does happen except for, like, Carlos.
It's, like, setup. Yeah, it's not even, like, anything really happens.
But Lynette's was just stupid. But it was – she was lying about her kid having, like, a terminal disease.
Yeah.
So you don't see that on TV often.
She was desperate to do some yoga.
Yeah. And then Susan and Edie's was quirky. And Bree's was my favorite because, like, we get the pharmacist, the weird pharmacist. Mm-hmm. And I like that he's a weird incel.
I like this angle. No, it's not just, like, a love triangle. It's like, oh, shit. Like, she doesn't even know this man. It's crazy. Borderline insane.
Yeah. So, yeah. I'd say that's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
We have a bit different views.
Yeah, okay. Did a good deep dive there.
Well, you guys, another week down.
Another week down. We're halfway through.
Yeah.
Officially past that mark.
We hope we could bring some joy to your Monday or Tuesday or whenever you listen. Yeah. It comes out on Monday every week. So mm-hmm. we hope that's when you're listening. But anytime is good. As these episodes rack up, you're going to have lots to catch up on
yeah,
if you're going at a slower pace. I know a lot of slow podcast listeners, so take your time.
Take your time.
But we love making these for you. We love talking about Desperate Housewives. We're having lots of fun. We appreciate your support. And you can follow us on all the platforms.
Absolutely.
Once again, rate and review.
Rate, review, follow on Spotify. Follow on, subscribe.
Yeah,
talk. I'm like, what are the terms?
What are the buzzwords?
Yeah.
And talk to your friends about us. Like, share us with somebody.
Just bring up Desperate Housewives casually, and you'll be surprised to see that there's actually a lot of fans out there.
Everybody's
is what we're
a
learning.
Fan. Everybody's like, oh, I watched that show.
Yeah,
and I'm like,
so
what?
Bring it up. And then see if someone reacts and then tell them about our podcast.
But we're happy that you're along for the ride, and we'd love to hear any feedback that you have for us.
Mm-hmm.
Apple ratings, Housewives, Fuck, Marry, Kill, whatever you want. Other than that, I mean, we just have to say, know your neighbors.
Know your neighbors.
Bye, guys.
Bye.